This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Friday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto in Chicagoland right now. Lots of clouds. Little peeks at the sun, though. Get some insight into Apple's TV streaming service. It launches today. The government jobs report for October. That's today's headliner. We're joined by Carl Riccadonna, chief U.S. economist at Bloomberg in New York. Carl, a lot of people saying this was better than expected. Maybe that's why the markets are moving today. Is that what you think?
Well, it certainly is better than expected. And the good news is, well, I'll combine the good news and the bad news. The bad news is the factory sector is in a downturn. It's in recession. The good news is that the recession is mild enough, at least thus far, in the factory sector, that it's not dragging the broader economy down with it. And if we look at categories like private sector service hiring, those categories are still showing a healthy degree of expansion.
Now, if this is what you're talking about with the factories, if that continues, I would imagine that's going to be a challenge.
That certainly is going to be a challenge. A little bit after the jobs report, we got the National Manufacturing ISM report, and it was weaker than expected. When we look at the number of hours that factory workers are putting in, that number is in decline as well. So that is certainly a downdraft for the economy. Now, we have seen plenty of episodes in the past where the factory sector is in recession, and the rest of the economy manages to muddle through, and I think that's a good baseline scenario for what we should anticipate in the current quarter. The economy not going to perform as well as it did in the first half of this year, growing less than 2% in the current quarter, but certainly not sliding into recession either.
Talk about some of the revisions that we saw in this. The October number obviously is one thing, but some of the revisions from August and September, pretty interesting.
Yes, we did see revisions making it a stronger profile for hiring over the last couple of months, and that speaks to the underlying momentum in the economy. So we're still in relatively good shape here. But the one thing we should consider, if we look at what's driving the economy at the moment, it's not multiple horses pulling the wagon, so to speak. It really is just one core driver, and that's consumer spending. So we really have to be focused on the health of consumers and their willingness to open their pocketbooks as we head into the all-important holiday shopping season. And when we look at those types of gauges, households are saving a little bit more than they did earlier this year. Sentiment has cooled down. And when we look at the income trend, wage and salary income growth, it's holding up, but it is decelerating. So I think we are going to see a more cautionary stance from consumers in the final quarter of the year. And that's going to, on the broader scheme, lead to subpar economic gains.
Good insight as always. Thank you. Carl Riccadonna, chief U.S. economist at Bloomberg in New York. Just ahead, lower oil prices cause a top energy company to take a major earnings hit. Oil today is up right about 2%. It is back solidly in the $55 range. And that's a very interesting aspect of this story here. ExxonMobil reporting a nearly 50% drop in third quarter earnings, yet the stock is up today. Let's find out what's going on in oil. Phil Flynn, senior market analyst at the Price Group, Fox News business contributor. Phil, let's talk about oil more generally. You have had prices dipping and really very stubborn as of late.
We really have. I mean, we've seen oil actually collapse in the month of October, really on concerns of a slowing global economy, you know, concerns that, of course, that production is going to, you know, continue to rise and we'd have a glut of oil because everything's bad. But what's weird about that, if you look at the actual data, you know, that kind of is an exaggeration. If you look at oil supplies, they're only barely above the five-year average for this time of year. We're getting into the refining season now, and you know, refineries weren't operating. So, you know, usually that's their slow time. And generally, after today's blockbuster jobs number, it would suggest a little bit that we're going to have a big a big rally in the oil market, because a lot of people have been betting on a recession, and the recession's probably not going to come.
Yeah, a lot of people have been betting on that for a long time, and it just seems to be held off. So, I mean, explain why that might have an impact on the oil markets, kind of what's going on in the broader economy.
You know, I think that there's a lot of people that think that if we start closing businesses, laying people off, we're going to use less energy. But that's not happening. It's not happening at all. We are seeing a slowdown in manufacturing. We're seeing it around the globe. But here in the U.S., even though the ISM manufacturing number missed the original expectations, it really wasn't as bad as some people had feared after we saw that big drop in Chicago manufacturing. And the big thing is they feel if manufacturing slows down, everybody's going to park their car and go home. That's not the case. We're a consumer economy. Driving demand is near a record high. You know, despite all the electric cars and alternative fuels, we're setting records with gasoline demand. So, you know, generally a good economy means good oil demand, and I think that the perception that the economy is doing better is jacking those prices up today.
Let's talk about ExxonMobil. You got the stock up a little more than 2% today, even though they really got hammered last quarter.
You remember the good old days when they used to complain about ExxonMobil making obscene profits? Whatever happened to that, right? You know, now the losses are absolutely stunning, you know, especially for a company that at one time was the most profitable company in the entire universe. The oil giant is going through some changes right now. They have lower oil prices. They missed a big part of the U.S. shale boom, and they're restructuring a little bit. But the good news is they did beat expectations. The CEO says that there are better days coming, so maybe we're looking at the final era of really bad earnings for big oil. We'll have to see.
And just talk about the fact that the U.S. is producing so much oil now. It gets talked about a little bit, but that's just completely restructured things globally.
It really has, you know, and if you look at the cost of production of a shale well compared to what we used to have to do, you know, build these big oil platforms in the, you know, the middle of the ocean, you know, usually your cash outlay for these companies should be a lot lower. And so that is an amazing change in the industry. It's one of the things that ExxonMobil really hasn't adjusted to. But on the other side of that equation, the shale oil production doesn't produce for as long a period of time. So if you put too much emphasis on just shale only, when oil demand grows in the next few years, you might not have enough supply to meet it. So it's this definitely this delicate balance between old-time oil and new-time oil, and ExxonMobil's trying to find what that balance should be.
Thanks so much for joining us. Good analysis. Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst at Price Group. Oil today back in the $55 range. It is up right about 2%. Up next, the Chicago Innovation Awards salute the Adler Planetarium, along with a company that some are calling the Airbnb of farming.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Another chance for you to win $1,000, and Keyword for Cash is just ahead. The 18th Annual Chicago Innovation Awards were presented this week. WBBM, a proud media sponsor of the awards. Luke Tannen is joining us, Executive Director of Chicago Innovation. Luke, I know a lot of exciting companies, for-profit, non-profit, always celebrated at Chicago Innovation. Give us maybe a couple of them that people haven't heard about, but they should be hearing about.
Sure. Well, it was a big event just this past Monday. We had 1,200 people, 25 winners honored out of 450 nominees, and some new ones that folks in Chicago probably don't know. One is called Tillable. It's the first and only online marketplace for the $32 billion U.S. farmland rental market. You could almost think of it as the Airbnb for farming. So farmers can go on to Tillable and can expand their operations by now having the ability to know where they can find available farmland.
Talk to us about go ahead. Keep going.
Yeah, just like another one that's a consumer product that that anybody could use, although it's really great for, in particular, adults with physical limitations, is called QB. It's a small elliptical type of machine. It's for your feet. It sits on the floor. It's great for elderly people, those who are going through rehab, or it can be used by people at work under your desk. And it's amazing. They've sold 150,000 of these products. So it's really addressing a real need.
And you're seeing that a lot of these, I'm thinking like Adler Planetarium, Zooniverse. I mean, there's just a great variety, not only of nominees, but obviously of the winners.
Yes, and that's our whole point is, you know, we're trying to celebrate startups, big corporations, nonprofits, all types of industries. So Adler Planetarium Zooniverse, it's actually the world's largest and most popular crowdsourced platform for people-powered scientific research. Think of it as citizen science. So it's tapping into the wisdom and insights of people all over the world who can make contributions to the field of discovery. And there's been over 1.8 million people globally who have collaborated with researchers. There's currently over 150 projects ranging from classifying galaxies to tracking resistance to antibiotics and so much more.
Really, really fascinating stuff every single year. Thank you. The 18th Annual Chicago Innovation Awards handed out this week. Luke Tannen joining us, Executive Director of Chicago Innovation.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Apple TV Plus is making its debut today as it goes up against a crowded field that includes Netflix, Disney, and other competitors. Iconic retailer Toys R Us looks to make a holiday comeback this year. It's Entrepreneur Friday. This afternoon, we'll meet a businessman who's turned his hobby into a growing company. Mayor Lightfoot says she wants to look forward now that Chicago teachers have returned to the classroom. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 257 points. The NASDAQ is up 70, and the S&P is up 24. Oil today keeps rising. It is up more than 2.5%. We're getting a mix of sun and clouds in Chicagoland today with a high near 40. Right now, 33 degrees. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Toys R Us making a comeback this season, returning to malls in some major cities, offering a hands-on shopping experience. We welcome Jan Rogers-Niffen, CEO of J. Rogers-Niffen Worldwide, based in New York. Jan, that hands-on experience, Amazon can't provide that, at least not yet.
Well, no, it's a great idea, but if a comeback means two stores in two malls, one in Houston Galleria and one in the in New Jersey, means they're coming back, yeah, but it's not 40,000 square foot stores all across America. And the other comeback is basically selling online through Target. So do I think it's a good idea? Yes. Do I think it'll be fun for people who go there? Yes. Do I think their little traveling exhibition that changes mall to mall every 6 months is a good idea and fun? Yes. Do I think Amazon, Walmart, and Target own toys? And do I think anyone else will ever own toys again in your investing lifetime? No. But I think this will be fun, just like the FAO Schwartz store is fun in Rock Center in New York. But it's not going to change the face of retailing toys.
So is it more just about making a little splash, getting some pub? I mean, we're talking about it all the way here in Chicago.
Exactly. It is about creating some excitement, and it's a good idea. And as a small company doing fun, experiential things, they can probably make a living. But if it's going to make it available for Mattel and Hasbro to sell toys besides through Walmart, Target, and Amazon, no, that's not going to happen. It's not going to change the toy business. It's not going to change your toy buying experience. It may change something you do with your kids. It'd certainly be fun, but it's not going to be a big business like Toys R Us was when they owned Toys in America out of 40,000 square foot stores. That day is never coming back.
Yes, it does keep that brand alive, though. The Toys R Us brand kind of keep it going, and maybe there'll be more value later.
That's why somebody bought that IP. So that intellectual property became available. Someone stepped up and said, this brand means something. I'm going to buy it. And they'll do some business online, especially through the Target website, and they'll do some business in those malls. And maybe they can make a living because, you know, the expense structure is down to nothing now. But it's not going to be a big toy business.
Thanks so much. Always good analysis. Jan Rogers-Niffen, CEO of J. Rogers-Niffen Worldwide, based in New York. Markets are rising today. Dow up 255, NASDAQ up 70, and the S&P is up 24. Let's see what's going on. Susan Schmidt is joining us, head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors here in Chicago. Susan, as you've been poking around today, what are you making of what you're seeing on Wall Street?
Well, it's a pretty positive outlook, I think, from the street today. The jobs number this morning was stronger than people expected, really thinking that it was going to be depressed from the GM strike and not feeling great after last month's numbers. So nice positive surprise with positive revisions for the previous months. And I think that is boosting confidence in the market. We're seeing a risk-on move. You're seeing energy, industrials both strong today. And the counter to that, when it's risk-off, we see staples, utilities, healthcare strong. Those are not the leaders today. So I think the market is buoyed by the job numbers, and I think feeling that the economy is fairly resilient and taking a positive outlook.
So fascinating to me, whether it's jobs numbers or a company's earnings. Fascinating that meeting or exceeding expectation is really all that matters. It doesn't matter whether the number itself is necessarily good. It's all about what people are expecting.
That's right, because remember that we know what's happened. So those stock prices are based on what we expect of future returns. And it is all about forward expectations. And those have a lot of variance in them, which is why the market pays attention to every mention from a CEO, particularly right now when we're hearing all these earnings reports still releasing.
So just yesterday, behind the scenes, we were talking about Apple and the Apple Watch and just how important that is to the company. Now you have Google stepping up to buy Fitbit. Really fascinating transaction here.
Indeed. So very interesting, unexpected transaction for the market this morning. Google steps up to buy Fitbit. Google has had a focus on hardware. They're trying to be very much a part of the connected consumer Internet of Things battle. So this acquisition of Fitbit makes a lot of sense for them. It is another way for them to get into the wearables and that wearables operating system. So I think that is really taking on Apple. Remember that Apple's results, a big part of that was the wearables. And so Google is, again, I think, strengthening their position, and this helps leapfrog them ahead because they really didn't have an offering.
And just emphasizes, regardless of the technology company, just the importance and how lucrative it is to be able to monetize data.
Most definitely. And I think that's what companies all around are talking about. And when we look about when we look forward at the disruptors, we look about and we see what's changing in the market, it really is taking advantage of that consumer data. The consumer is what's supporting the U.S. economy right now. I think companies are taking a lot of comfort in the fact that if they can collect that data and find a way to optimize sales, that's going to better position them long term.
Yeah, thanks so much, Susan. Always really good analysis. Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors here in Chicago. Up next, it's Entrepreneur Friday. A interesting story. Guy who has massage and health as a hobby. Now he's turned it into a business. We'll get into that next.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Entrepreneur Friday on the Noon Business Hour. Today we meet a Chicagoan who left the corporate sales world and turned his passion for massage and holistic medicine into a thriving business. We welcome Michael Flatley, owner and therapist at Chicago Touch, located at Lake and Ada in the West Loop. Michael, good to have you on the show. So tell us about the process here. Massage, holistic medicine, it's all a hobby. And now you decide, hey, maybe I can make some money at this.
Yeah, well, I'll be honest with you. My mother was hoping that I would just get a degree in physical therapy because that is similar to massage, but it's married to medicine, and so it's more secure. But I just really had this affection for traditional anything like herbology, natural medicine, that type of thing, and more on the intuitive side. I knew I was blocked. When I was 19, I knew I was blocked for intuition, and I decided I didn't want to be blocked for intuition. So getting into this field served that purpose for me personally.
And so you've been doing this for a while now, over 10 years. Tell us, how has it changed? How did it take off? I mean, how did this really begin to work?
Honestly, I'm just going to be brutally honest. There's a lot of stuff I'm not that good at, but when I took workshops in the 80s on the healing arts, people gave me remarkable feedback. They said this is probably something I should go into because I definitely had a talent for it, and I had never had people tell me that before. So that's how it got started for me, and this field is really quite saturated. I actually think it makes sense as a part-time job. I'm doing it full time, but I think there's no dads that do what I do because there's more demand for our service on evenings and weekends, and parents want to work when their kids are in school. But also, dads have to produce a sufficient income to support a family, and it's really hard to do that as a massage therapist. I'm just being brutally honest.
No, that's interesting because I think a lot of people are wondering, hey, how did he make this work given the fact that it's a lot of competition in this area?
Well, you have to love it. You have to love it. This was a hobby for me for about 7 years before I went professional. So that tells you that it's something I'm really interested in. And people struggle if they want to become a professional photographer, a dancer, painter. You know, anything in the arts is also kind of challenging. Bottom line is I don't have kids. If I had had kids, I would have had to probably stay in the financial services or do something else similar that could support a family. But I had a lot of freedom. And honestly, for about 6 or 7 years now, I've been trying to shift again because I've been doing one-on-one for 31 years, and I want to shift into entertainment research because I now have basically my whole life. I'm 60. And I got started with intuition by age 19, and so I'm at a point now where I can make real contributions to, the next level of science fiction. So that's actually my passion that I work on the side. I also have a background in music theory going back to high school, which is the mid-70s. So I'm working on combining music theory with science fiction stories, like the idea that we're not the only planet in the universe that has jazz, that kind of thing.
So it sounds like a lot of people talk about this, you know, just taking something that you enjoy and actually figuring out how to make money at it. And when it comes to this massage and also holistic medicine, you were able to do that for a long time. And help us understand here, holistic medicine. It's a term I think a lot of people aren't familiar with. They understand massage, not so much holistic medicine.
Well, right. We associate medicine, like the way it's practiced in hospitals, with, you know, fixing problems and curing and things like that. And holistic medicine really has to do with understanding how to adjust the lifestyle, considerations of diet, you know, getting enough rest, getting enough water. A lot of people aren't sufficiently hydrated, and a lot of people are addicted to fast foods and so forth. So holistic medicine is really just anything like herbology, things that have been around for thousands of years, acupuncture, Chinese medicine, Ayurveda. Think of what acupuncture is for China. Well, India also has a huge tradition going back a similar length of time, 5,000 years or more. So look how popular yoga is compared to 10, 20, 30 years ago. So obviously people are waking up to this, right?
Yeah, well, once they actually kind of get a taste for some of these things and if they see a value in it, then yeah, absolutely, then it takes off. Really cool to talk to you. Michael Flatley, owner and therapist at Chicago Touch. He is our Friday entrepreneur. Still to come, Apple TV Plus. It's now. Join the crowded online streaming space. Everything you need to know.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Apple TV Plus has launched today. $4.99 a month. Let's find out more about the new streaming service from Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Vertair Group here in Chicago. Tim, we've talked about how crowded this streaming space is. Is Apple doing anything to differentiate itself to try to be able to take some market share?
Well, certainly. It's a very interesting sort of dynamic, Cisco, that Apple is choosing here. And it's frankly not a like-for-like comparison. It's very much apples and oranges, no pun, or perhaps a pun. Netflix, obviously, you know, has defined what an all-you-can-eat streaming service looks like. And we all know about all the other streamers that are out there as well as still to come. But Apple's is definitely differentiated. First of all, the price point, $4.99 a month. Depending on your perspective, that's either, you know, the cost of a rental movie on demand from cable, or it's a lesser cost alternative to, say, those bigger packages of like a Netflix or what HBO Max will be, which is, you know, $15 a month or so. This is, you know, a limited array of content. It's original stuff. There's no real library attached to it, right? So the proposition is very different. I think for Apple, it's actually a very interesting move because they have a gigantic install base and a superior customer service love of their products. And I think what Apple is doing here is beginning a longer journey that might more emulate what Amazon does with Amazon Prime. And Amazon Prime, a very robust service, for streaming as well, but is really part of a bigger calculus with Amazon, which is things like free shipping, et cetera. You can see that maybe Apple might use this as a window into upgrading services and maybe helping bring down the cost of very expensive hardware by becoming more of a service company, not sort of an end user buy a consumer electronics business.
With streaming, we talked about the competition, obviously. Are we really seeing companies fighting over users in that you get this person, I get that person? Or what they're really trying to do is just get people to buy multiple services and continue buying multiple services?
Yeah, I mean, look, that's a really good question. And if you take that from I own an Apple Watch and an iPad and an Apple phone device, right? That's a bunch of services that could fill those different devices. And that's maybe where Apple kind of may differentiate. And arguably, an Apple TV Plus could be kind of like the first button or the first consideration. It's already baked in. And you'll see that with aggressive promotions, right? Basically, anybody who's got a modern device from Apple over the last number of months is getting this service for free. So that's a pretty big install base, and distribution can really gain a lot of consideration versus, say, these other services where you maybe have to hunt for them to get them.
Thanks so much. Always good to have you on the show. Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Vertair Group. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just rewind to the time you want. We have a brand new pause and rewind function. It works on our website and also on the radio.com app.